This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening, Bahamas. This is Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto, and it's my pleasure to have in the studio a Bahamian icon, a veteran radio host, Mr. Eddie Carter, who is a lifelong supporter of the Bahamian culture and music as a whole. It's a pleasure to have you. Good evening, Eddie.
It's good to be here, Dr. Greg. Good to see you this evening. Thanks for having me.
So we're just going to talk from your perspective as a man who's just a little bit of beyond middle age. Mm-hmm. Your experiences with...
Well, I got to be beyond middle age now. I'm going to be 60. I don't think I live to be 120.
Okay.
I plan on living forever, and I'm off to a good start, but I don't think it's going to work.
Let's aim for 120.
Okay.
So we're going to talk about your experiences with the inevitable. And what we're talking about today, basically the topic is can't stop peeing. We're talking to the men out there. We're talking about their urinary issues. And what we talk, the medical term is lower urinary tract symptoms, whether it's air, got to pee all the time, or it's obstructive, where you have a very weak flow, you can't initiate a flow, you have incomplete bladder emptying, you're dribbling, and very...
I'm shaking just from the memories you're giving me right now, okay?
So we wanted, and you're here on a voluntary basis. In fact, you were very brave, and I thank you very much for actually volunteering to come and speak about your experience. What was it like, and you suffering needlessly in silence for so many years, how it affected the quality of your life, how it affected you socially, professionally. You did have a minimally invasive procedure. What was that like?
Minimum to you, okay?
Yes.
They're all very invasive to us.
Well, for any man, when you're going down there, that means...
off the top, it's invasive.
Yeah, well, you're asleep anyway, so that's...
That's usually when the most invasive things happen.
That's the comfort.
It's when you're asleep, when your guard is down.
That's right. And what is your life like now? How is it?
Well, you know, Greg, first of all, let me say, again, thanks for having me, and I think it's very important that... We talk about our health issues publicly. You know, when I was a kid growing up, we didn't have those conversations publicly. We didn't even talk much about, you know, the condom and that type of stuff. We didn't talk about, you know, getting women pregnant and the impact of that socially, financially, in every kind of way you can think of on yourself, you know. So I am glad that we as a nation are maturing enough to the point now where we can have these open conversations about things that relate to our health. Because I think everyone will attest, especially the older that you get, the more you realize, you know, the car isn't as important as you thought. The style of telephone you got isn't as important as you thought. But man, if your health is in problem, then that's what's in that. Then you realize health is what it's all about. And one advice I could say to everybody is start early. Get yourself baselines done. You know, follow the guidelines. You know, these guidelines are out there, and they're not just, you know, darts thrown at a dartboard by some guys, you know, on a Wednesday night in a pub. Okay? You know, these are medical doctors who have studied us for years, studied effects of everything that we use for years, and have come down with guidelines that are presented to us that, if followed, will give us a better chance. Nobody can guarantee your great health. But all you could do is put yourself in the best position to succeed. So I do encourage you to start young. I had my first, the DRE, the digital rectal exam. That's correct?
Correct.
All right, the DRE. I actually had that live on the air, Greg.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
Live on the air. Yes. I was doing the morning show with Chrissy Love on Island FM, the Morning Boil. And I was turning 40. And I was approached, and I was thought that, you know, we needed a way to for men to understand it's okay to do these things. It's okay to care about your health. It's okay to go to exams. It's okay to see a doctor before you get sick, right? And so that was the whole purpose of this, is to follow the guidelines. So I had my 40th birthday came live on the air that morning. I remember, I think it was Dr. Roberts. We were down to Dr. Roberts' office right there in Oaks, over the hill there in Third Terrace. And live on the air, one minute I was saying, no, good morning, NASA. So on the next minute I was saying, right?
Yes,
but let me tell you, that little second, after that man told me everything felt good, every discomfort thought that I may have had disappeared. And I was amazed because we're all the same, Craig. Let's be honest. And I think Bahamian men may be worse than most, right? We are very phobic when it comes to that area of our body. We, for some reason, we're very intimidated. We're scared. I don't know if we think having these exams are going to do something to our sexual mindset or in some way make us less of a man. I guarantee you, fellas, it is the exact opposite. Okay, because you leave these exams feeling good. When you come back and it says, hey, you're in good health, your chest goes out, you're feeling more of a man, right? So don't let those fears stop you guys from getting it done. Now back to Greg.
Well, I'll talk about the digital rectal because that's always an elephant in the room. Anytime we talk about the prostate, obviously men cringes when they think about it. The thing about medicine, it always is it's always evolving. So what was the gold standard 20 years ago might not even be the gold standard 15 years ago.
I have a feeling you're trying to say something to me here, Greg. What are you trying to say?
I'm trying to say that you
put
actually...
Put the gloves on and tell me, Greg.
You actually said something that can be troubling because you said, all right, I was told that they had the digital rectal exam and everything is fine. I often hear that.
Right.
And that's a misconception because... Even if the digital rectal has, even we're looking at guidelines. Every specialty in medicine has guidelines, right. International guidelines. Right. For me, I was trained under two forms of guidelines. I was AUA, American Urology Association, and EUA, European Association of Urology. Very similar. Mm-hmm.
So it's not like lawyers where you're either on the British side or in an American system?
No.
It's not like that?
It's not that. In fact, the European in many ways were a lot more advanced. So in terms of things that would come out for the Europeans, they may come out 10, 12 years before the Americans accept it. So they were a little bit more progressive. And it's not as much a capitalist medical system where the pharmaceutical companies or the big...
big pharma.
Big
they
pharma.
They got made theirs.
Are basically dictating the everything that happens in terms of what's approved and marketing and everything else. In Europe, where a lot of the countries have socialist medicine, it's basically looking at studies that are going to improve the quality of life of patients without that money aspect basically corrupting the system.
Well, with the understanding that a better nation health-wise, the better nation across the board in every aspect, the healthier you could be as a nation, the better, the wealthier you are going to be. So health is wealth. And we have a lot of work to do. I mean, America is behind Europe or not, one thing I do know is we're way behind both.
Correct.
Right?
But we're catching up. We're catching up. We have every specialty available here. We have basically every innovation in terms of cutting edge, minimally invasive
procedures.
Well,
I just booked a colonoscopy for a couple of weeks, so I'm excited about that. Yay, looking forward to that exam.
Hopefully within the year, we're going to have our first Da Vinci robot. So I was trained on the robot.
AI?
So basically a robot means you have very precise, minimally invasive surgery. It's basically in terms of what patient go through. It's keyhole incisions where it's minimally invasive recovery.
I've had that because I had an aneurysm.
Yes.
And they actually went in through my vein in my leg.
Yeah.
And went all the way up the vein to do their clotting, their clogging of the artery and stuff. So I've actually experienced some of that from a personal point of view. So I've had some fun health things we can discuss.
We have interventional Bahamian radiologists. So we have every specialty available here.
Yeah.
And many of us have trained with some of the best in the world. So we made that sacrifice to go off to foreign lands and under difficult circumstances to learn under the best so that we don't have to have our fellow Bahamians going out to Atlanta, or going out to Miami, or going to New York, or going to England to get that specialist care
Could do
where
it right here.
It's a different, going through any surgery or any kind of treatment, whether it's cancer or otherwise, is difficult. You want to be in your home environment. You want to be surrounded by your family and friends.
You want to go home. You recover better.
You want to go home to your own bed. Yes. It's even more terrifying to have to go and meet people and be in a different circumstance and surrounding, and family are wondering what's happening and they can't travel with you. So that's a sacrifice.
Well, depending on your family is a good thing or a bad thing.
That's true.
But I want to go back to what you were saying.
Yeah, so the digital rectal exam.
Because I did research to find a doctor with a small hand and all.
Yeah.
There are two doctors I refuse to do it because their fingers are a little too high. NBA size for me.
I mean,
tell me now, we don't have to do those digitals anymore?
So I'm talking about the American Urology Association, which I'll basically paraphrase in terms of routine surveillance for prostate cancer. The digital rectal exam has little to no role. First of all, it's very subjective. The next is what a lot of the public don't understand, and even physicians and a lot of general practitioners and internists don't understand, is that when prostate cancer is early, the digital rectal exam feels completely normal. That's when we're trying to pick up prostate cancer. Mm. So to tell a person that your prostate feels fine, you don't have cancer, you're giving them a false notion that everything is fine when you may have cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you feel something abnormal, it's not necessary that you have prostate cancer as well. A nodularity can be from inflammation. It can be from infection. It can be from a previous biopsy. It can be congenital.
Yeah, but you know us, Craig.
Yes.
Yeah. Any little thing we get, and we going straight
to... So that's why we advocate blood tests.
The big C.
So we're annual from the age of 40, and every year after that, you want to get a PSA, prostate-specific antigen blood test, and you want to know not just that value in isolation, but we're comparing 1 year with the next. We want to compare, looking at the PSA velocity. Is there a significant change over time, even if your PSA value is still normal, that may cause us to do more other investigations?
So after looking and our baseline we talked about earlier, so now we're doing our PSA service. So what you do, if you see a change in our PSA, then we take it to the next level of testing.
Yeah, and it doesn't necessarily mean anything sinister, because a PSA is not what we call very sensitive or specific. It's not specific for cancer of the prostate.
Right.
It's specific to
just
the prostate gland.
Right.
So any inflammation of the prostate will cause it to rise.
Gotcha.
Any infection of the prostate will cause it to rise. If you have a very big, completely normal prostate, your PSA is going to be above normal. If you have any incomplete bladder emptying, anatomically, the prostate is a walnut-sized organ that lies underneath the bladder above the rectum. If you have a half-full bladder all the time because you can't empty your bladder, you're going to have that pressing on your prostate. That's going to cause your PSA to rise. If I put a clothespin on someone's penis and they can't pee for 24 hours, their PSA can go from 2 to 28
just overnight. I'm getting flashbacks just on this overnight conversation, Greg, because we could fast forward now. If y'all don't know, I knew Greg when he was a skinny little kid, okay? He was my next-door neighbor.
Well, I'm hopefully still skinny. Yes,
my next-door neighbor now. I was always a little bit older than Greg, but he was always my little neighbor. So I ended up, I guess I would say about 8 years ago, I really started being affected by what turned out to be a prostate problem. I remember the first time I really, really felt the effects of it. I was watching a football game, and I had to pee. And I went to the bathroom, and I just stenched. You know, my whole body just gripped me. I actually started sweating. My body was working so hard, trying to urinate. Nothing happened. I'd never felt this before, right? And as you already know, I've already had a bunch of medical things, right? But I've never felt this kind of inappropriate. I did not know what it was. And it subsided after a little bit, right? The pain kind of went away and everything went well. Then a couple days later, the same thing kind of happened again. And I had started to have trouble urinating. I kind of knew I wasn't urinating properly. You mentioned emptying the bag, right? I don't think I emptied the bag for a very long time. Because, you know, you remember how you used to pee as a teenager. I remember when I used to be at Waterloo, man, going to the bathrooms in the urinal, I was afraid I was going to break them, right? The stream was so strong. And then all of a sudden, you're getting these drips, right? And you're celebrating drips, Greg. And you know what? And what happens to us, Greg, and I honestly think my fellow Bahamian men, this, and we kind of do with our governments too, we tolerate
It becomes
that's
your,
a norm. The abnormal, it doesn't have to be.
The abnormal right. becomes your
yes,
normal.
Yes, you do. You make that, and I did. And I made my problem urinating my normal everyday thing.
Right? And it's a slow, progressive change. Your prostate doesn't get big in a month. It doesn't right. get big in 2 months. It's over a period of several years. Obviously, genetics play a role. Black men usually have bigger prostates than others. And in fact, when we talk about Africans versus Caribbean,
right.
men of the Caribbean ancestry usually even have a bigger prostate than men of African
really?
Ancestry. We even have a higher risk of getting prostate cancer and a more aggressive form of prostate cancer than even our African counterparts. So in terms of what are the risk factors for prostate cancer, age is number one. Mm. Being of African ancestry is number two. Mm-hmm. So that's why we have to be very diligent in picking up prostate cancer in our country, because we tick all the boxes for having a high risk of right. getting prostate cancer earlier
right.
than our other racial counterparts and a more aggressive form of the disease.
Right.
And we're not going to fare as well, even if we're the same stage as our Caucasian or Hispanic.
Right. The numbers don't lie.
Asian yeah. counterparts, yeah. we don't fare as well. We have a higher rate of recurrence as well. So even when we're quote-unquote cured, you still need to be diligent in following up, make sure that there's
no
recurrence.
You mean this can come back?
It can always come back. That's why it's important. So what has happened in the last few years is it's not just a crapshoot. Who's going to be affected by it coming back? We actually do genetic testing on either the biopsy sample of the prostate, the tissue sample, or on if we actually remove the prostate. Mm. So you don't need to necessarily remove the prostate to cure your prostate cancer. There are numerous ways that have excellent cure.
Is that the last... last recourse?
There are many ways that there's no right or wrong. Mm. There are patient factors. You might have different comorbidities. It might be because you have a certain mm-hmm. body habitus. You may be obese. There are the things that play a role.
How big a role does economics play in some of these decisions for us, Greg? A lot of us out there are struggling.
Yes.
Not everybody has full private insurance, so that's going to kick in and help with these
things. Through the public system, you can always get prostate cancer treatment. And there, it's very well subsidized, even through NIB. For example, if you have advanced prostate cancer, you can get very expensive medication absolutely free. So there's no reason why, even if you need radiation, it can be subsidized partly or completely by... the government itself. If you need surgery, that's completely readily available through the public system. Obviously, there's always personnel issues, there's always equipment issues, right. there's operating time issues.
Right.
That's another story in itself, but you will eventually get done.
Right.
You will eventually
And don't wait, fellas. I can tell you I waited way too long. I think, I don't know if you remember my case Greg, but I waited till it was very bad. I waited till I wasn't sleeping at night. I can't, honestly, before I had this procedure, I don't think I had a comfortable night's sleep in probably 2 years, where I wasn't urinating every, or not even trying to.
Yeah.
You know,
so
every
what,
couple of
what
hours.
Happens is your prostate grows in front of the bladder, around your urethra, your pee pipe, and basically where you're supposed to have a wide open bladder outlet, it basically envelops and encloses off. So a lot of men, instead of peeing through a big open hole, are peeing through a little slit. Mm-hmm. You're never going to be able to empty. And they'll think that they're emptying because over time, your bladder usually will progressively get increasing in size as well.
Right.
It'll become more muscular, contract with a greater force to be able to generate even a decent stream. Mm. The bladder can only, in layman's term, expand to a certain degree, and then it loses its elasticity. Mm. It loses its ability to contract. Mm-hmm. You develop what we call an atonic bladder, where it's almost like a flaccid balloon, where it only contracts partially. Well, you're never going to be able to empty.
Right.
So even at that stage...
Sounds like my belly's an atomic type.
Yeah. So even if at that stage we resect your prostate, we reduce the prostate, and I'm going to talk, there are many ways that we can do it, your bladder will never function properly. And we don't want to get to that stage.
Well, you know what did it for me, Greg?
Yeah.
Despite all the conversations about it and all my discomforts, but, you know, sleeping at night and even during the day, can't drink alcohol.
Yes.
You know, 2 drinks and, man, your body wants to, and you can't. That was the worst thing for me. So that sped things along. But what really did it for me was a conversation you and I had. And it was one of our first meetings when we were actually just discussing the whole thing in general. And of course, you're telling us, of course, you know, we have this bag in it, so it fills up. So it's never emptying, right? So and then I think you told me to imagine, you know, a tank or something with trap water, never emptying. What's going to happen to that liquid that's in there? And I thought about it. It kind of get nasty after a while,
yeah,
right?
So you're going to get recurrent urinary tract infections. Men really shouldn't be getting urinary tract infections. Their urethra is so long, some longer than others. But a woman, they have a very short urethra. Anatomically, they're predisposed to get infections because their anal verge and their urethra are very close. Right. So that's why we always teach the kids about the way you wipe.
Right.
Because you can keep giving yourself infections.
Yeah. It's really a poor design.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a design flaw. We can all admit it. Yeah. Let's admit it. It's a design flaw. All right. But so, that's what really kicked into me.
When you're walking around with a pool of urine day in and day out, bacteria is going to proliferate and grow, and you'll never get on top of the infection.
Right.
You can take antibiotics over and over. Eventually, you're going to get multi-drug resistant bacteria. You're going to have to be admitted to hospital for intervening.
And I was close to this.
Yes.
Now, I was close because I was silly. I waited way. I again did what we discussed a couple minutes ago. I made it my norm. I made the pain and not being able to urinate a part of my life. So it wasn't until my wife pushed me and until, you know, I got good consultation that I decided, okay, I got to do something about it. So I committed to doing this procedure. All right. Now, as the procedure was explained to me, you know, we were going to open the hole. Okay, and allow for better, you know, movement. Right, it makes perfect sense. Anyone who's ever been to the beach and build a sandcastle can kind of understand what we're talking about here, right?
So movement. Essentially, you want to take a 55, a 60-year-old, a 68-year-old's prostate, which inevitably is going to be enlarged, particularly men of Caribbean ancestry. Mm-hmm. They do it by decades. Usually, say 50% of 50-year-olds, 60% of 60-year-olds, 70% of 70. But it's actually probably about 70% of 60-year-olds are going to have inability to empty their bladder, and that can manifest in many ways: a weak flow, a difficulty in initiating a stream, dribbling as you walk away from the toilet, waking up more than once in the night to urinate. Mm-hmm. You don't. That's an abnormality. The other thing is that you're also going to have an issue where you're going to be peeing more than 8 times in the day.
I got to the point, Greg, where I had to sit on the bathroom.
Yes.
Because I was there for so long.
Yes.
Right? Hoping to get rid of urine because you know you're not empty. You know you're not, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I sit there. I actually have to sit on the toilet to go to the bathroom. And I'd be in there for 15 minutes, 20 minutes hoping to get a stream, right? So anyway.
Then we talk about what is affecting. It can negatively impact. There's back pressure on your bladder.
Mm-hmm.
There's back pressure on your kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to develop what we medically call hydronephrosis of your kidneys.
You old enough to remember Lethal Weapon?
Yes.
Do you remember the scene when he was stuck on the bathroom?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Danny Glover's on the bathroom. And he was there so long, his legs froze. Yes. And he couldn't move. And there was a bomb there. And Riggs had to come in. I've been literally like that. Where I've sat on that toilet so long, hoping to urinate, my legs are gone numb and paralyzed. I've turned and have to crawl off the toilet.
So you're at the nth degree when you can't even urinate or initiate a stream when you're standing up. You have to use all your intra-abdominal muscles to bear down and try to push up.
And it makes you cackle all the time, too.
Yes, yes.
Because you're pushing everything.
And another sign that you're not emptying your bladder is you're straining to pass stool, or you're even gently passing stool, and all of a sudden you pass urine because your bladder is always full. You're pushing down using your intra-abdominal muscles, and you're gonna be passing some urine. And you're not expecting it.
Right.
That's another sign of that. So a lot of men will say, you know what? I'll ask them, how are you doing with emptying your bladder? And the men will say, oh, I only pee once a day. That is something in itself because, first of all, you might be in renal failure. You're not producing enough urine.
Often should we pee, Greg? I mean,
so you want to go more than 2 hours. Obviously, it can be affected by.
So every 2 hours is reasonable to
that's
urinate.
Reasonable. But it can be affected by some men think that they have to drink 20 gallons of water every day. Even if your kidneys are perfect,
you're gonna urinate
even
more.
If your prostate is small, you're going to be peeing all the time. So you have to look at
coffee 11 o'clock at night.
You'll look at what you're drinking, the volume that you're drinking, et cetera. Caffeine.
But we're
alcohol.
Told to drink all of this water.
Well, we want to have, on average, 5 to 6 ounce glasses of water a day or equivalent.
Right.
Obviously, if you're out in the sun, you're perspiring.
Yeah, so you need more.
You're going to need more, obviously.
Right.
So you have to look at every individual as an individual. So what are your symptoms? Some people are happy waking up 5 times in the night. Maybe their wife, who's also waking up, isn't happy that, but that's become their normal.
Right.
How many men are driving with a cup or a container to urinate into because they can't even get enough?
I've kept a cup by the bed before.
Yeah. There are men who are, their norm is they can't even wake up enough
to go. So what you end up doing, I'll tell you.
Or they'll have a bucket.
And I've done it with a bottle or a cup, and you just roll to your side. And the stream is so little, you can do that.
Yeah.
Without fear of splattering.
Yeah, so you shouldn't even have to live with that in dignity. And
I did, Greg, for years.
And I mean, come on, your wife is right next to you, and you got a bucket smelling in your urine.
Yeah, but you know what?
Yeah.
She didn't know. Because
okay.
I clean that out,
all
right? I do my thing. I get up before her every morning, so that cup I may have gotten through the night, by the time she wakes up, that place, we hide it.
Yes.
We do.
And I think you hide it from yourself.
No, we hide it from
yourself. You hide the reality of what's going on
from yourself.
From
everybody who loves us, we hide it because we know we need help.
Yes.
And we just don't want the wife to nag. We don't want our mom to nag, dad, brother, whatever.
And most men don't want to see a doctor. They don't want.
Of course not.
They don't want blood taken.
You go to them when you're sick. That's the only time you think you're supposed to go to them.
This time bomb can cause you to have kidney failure.
Yeah.
Acute, and if you leave it long enough, chronic renal failure.
Well, you know, you're fighting a lot of culture here for Bahamian men. I'll be perfectly honest. I grew up in an era when we thought of going to the doctor to die.
Yes.
That's when you go to the hospital. That's when you go to the doctor. You're going to die soon. You know, we have to get away from that mindset, you know, and so it requires a lot of education. Again, that's why shows like this are so good.
So for men, women, and kids, I'll always say, don't let the bladder rob you of your happiness. Mm. Don't let the bladder control your life. Mm. Don't let where the next bathroom is dictate how you live.
I can't go because I got to wait to make sure
there are persons who won't have even a glass of water at work.
Because they know.
Because they're embarrassed that they're... Right. Their colleague's going to see them going to pee every 15 minutes.
Off, yeah.
Or they can't function professionally. Or they're teaching in a class and they know if they drink anything, they're going to be excusing themselves all the time. Or they're going to be not making it to the toilet.
You adjust your lifestyle to make this discomfort work. So I get this and now I'm ready for surgery.
Yes.
All right. So guys, the prep and everything is, you know, all that mentally you wrap your head about what's about to happen. I'll tell you how the surgery went. My wife, I think she drove me to the procedure. You go there early one morning. Basically, you are put to sleep. I felt nothing. I could say that. I was comfortably put to sleep. And again, fellas, or I guess some ladies out there, if you are concerned about that procedure, please do not be. I know you never want to call anything routine. But these guys have that down to a science, literally. It is, I mean.
And the take-home message is that there's more than way to skin a cat. Mm. There are at least a dozen different ways that we can resect your prostate. It's an inevitable part of getting older. It's the most common procedure, and I'll use the word procedure over surgery because there's no recovery, that any urologist in the world is going to do because inevitably, if you reach a certain age, you're going to be placed on medication as a first-line treatment. Eventually, slowly but surely, that medication is going to be less and less effective because your prostate reaches a certain threshold in terms of size and the medication eventually becomes ineffective. And you need a procedure. And there are many ways that we can do that. So we'll talk about all the different procedures that are readily available. And
I'll tell you what happened to my procedure.
Yeah, on the other end of the bake. This is Urologist Speaks.
Cora, I look funny, all black up yesterday.
But she say she bump into a wall when she's running after the churn them.
Yeah, but last Saturday, you see her arm was all black and blue, right?
What you saying? You think something wrong between her and Jack?
I ain't sure, but you know Jack is a jealous man. I hear him and Cora last Friday. I hear him say he hear Cora have eyes for Junior.
Now, you know that ain't true. Cora is a good woman, does mind her business, take care of them churn and go to church every Sunday. So what you think we should do?
I think we should report Jack, you know. Cora don't say nothing, but silence hides violence. And we don't want to line up in the cemetery.
Not me. I ain't getting in nobody business. Then Jack come after me and I land up next to Cora.
No, man, we could call a text Crime Stopper. And remember, we can even get some grocery money for our tip.
Remind me again how this work.
We can call them in Miami at 328-TIPS or 328-8477. Or when we in the island, call toll-free at 300-TIPS or 300-8477. And if you don't have no minutes, use the Crack Crime Bahamas app and we could text them. And the messages get on mix-up before it leave your phone so nobody can know what you're saying?
So what are we waiting on then? Let's go earn some grocery money.
You try to rest, but roll with the best. For all your printing needs, there ain't no one better, no. For posters and banners, magazines and flyers, for window decals, greeting cards and newsletters. No job too big and there's no job too small. You name it, we can print it, just give us a call. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Always on the go? Missed a show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back. This is Urologist Speaks with BAME Urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto, and it's my great pleasure to have veteran radio hosts and BAME and cultural icon, Mr. Eddie Carter, in the house.
Icon's a strong word, but anyway.
I think you well deserve it. No one's going to argue that. But we're here talking about enlargement of your prostate,
yes.
Specifically benign disease, benign prostate hyperplasia. What your experiences were with mm-hmm. that inevitable disorder mm-hmm. that every man will face as he's blessed with advanced age. And minimally.
And you're right, you know, it's yes. a blessing. We forget that. I'm glad yes. you said it like that because, you know, the only alternative to getting old is dying young.
Yes.
I think much. We got to remember that. You know, we feel bad we're hitting 60s and the 50s, but you know what? We've all had friends and relatives who didn't. So be thankful for that.
Yes. All right, so you were one of those notorious ones that ignored the symptoms.
I did.
Suffered needlessly, had a lot of sleepless nights.
Lots of them.
And I'm sure dreaded drinking in public because you didn't know
that. Stop drinking.
And that in itself obviously is going to affect
you. It's the one good thing that's come out of this. Yeah. I haven't started either, so yes, I've continued not drinking. But anyway.
Well, even drinking water. Yeah. Some persons... Yeah. Can't even drink a glass of water.
Right. You're right. Because you don't want to. Because it hurts when you have to try and pee. So you avoid.
Or they'll stop drinking at 5 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah.
Because they know they'll be peeing. Or they'll be peeing all night. Yeah. Just even as a urologist.
And when you get late stage, that don't work.
Yeah. It's going to affect your kidneys. It's going to affect your heart.
Yeah.
It's going to affect your general health.
Yeah.
You're going to be exacerbated by being dehydrated all the time. Your mouth is dry. And not only that, you can be at greater risk of developing kidney stones. And that's the most painful thing known to man.
See, kidney
you
don't issues want a kidney run stone. In my family.
Yeah.
So that was another thing that once I was educated on that fact, the fact that, you know, because I was, as you just mentioned, because it's your defense, you don't drink as much.
Yeah.
Right? Because, you know, obviously, if it hurts trying to pee, avoid the liquid. But just like you said, I have kidney issues in my family. So one of the worst things that I could absolutely do in my life is stop consuming liquids.
Yeah. So as I said, it happens to us all. Yeah. So we're talking to everyone. If it hasn't happened to you yet,
it will.
You know someone who in your family is of that age and it's going to affect them. So it's just, I'm just giving you a warning. Look for the signs, look for the symptoms, and don't suffer needlessly. Don't ever let the bladder control your life. If you're waking up more than once in the night to pee, you might be the culprit itself. You might be drinking too much in the way of liquids. You may be
lifestyle is a big part.
If you're having six beers before you go to bed, obviously you're going to wake up five times to pee. If you're having a cup of coffee, you're not going to you're not going to get a good night's sleep, and you're going to be peeing all night as well. So,
All right. So I designate and decide to anoint a particular Saturday for this wonderful procedure. Right. So I have the procedure. Like I said, it's very smooth. Check in. Boom, boom, boom. No discomfort. You take your Saturday off. I wake up. It's all over. Again, you know, the recovery of procedures, I think, is something that maybe we don't talk about enough, Greg. And I'm across the boarding this for medical professions. I do not think doctors do tell us good enough what to expect when it is over. Because some things in the recovery thing were scary. I mean, let's keep it real, you know, because the procedure now, I got cut inside me. Now, everyone knows when you cut a part of your body, what does it do? It scabs, right? It did inside too. So what happens for the first part of first couple days after this is you do urinate blood, and you usually have a bag. So you're going to have a bag at first that you got to change.
Right? Well, usually, so everyone is different.
Everyone,
so
it's again, very, okay.
It's, yeah. It all depends on the size of the prostate.
Right.
For
right.
example, someone who has a normal-sized prostate.
Like you hope not to have to take home a bag.
Yeah.
But most people do, right?
So it's minimally invasive. They're different. I'm going to highlight the different, I won't go through all 12 procedures, but there are different ways of doing it. Some are just going to temporize you. So in the capitalist medical system of the United States, where they'd love to see you every 3, 5, 7 years, they would resect just enough prostate so that you're happy with your symptoms,
and
then they're going to come right back. I like to do one and done, where we're going to resect
my
enough.
Car dealer with my tires is just like that too. Every 6 months.
Yeah, so I don't live my life by greed. I live my life by the happiness of my patients. So I would like to see, not have to see you for 25 years.
Right.
And for most men, they're 65. If they reach 25 years and they got a problem, they'll be happy at 90 to come and see me again.
Yeah,
and
if I got to deal with that, then that's okay.
That's a small price to pay. But everybody's different.
Yeah.
Some people, in terms of the vascularity of the prostate, it's a lot more vascular than others. So some people...
So what makes an attractive prostate?
Enlarged.
You're sounding pretty intimate while you're starting to talk about these prostates out there, Greg. Tell us what makes an attractive prostate. If we were to talk to our prostate and tell it we want it to be like something, what would we want it to be
so
like?
So we want to see somebody early in the game where they were on medical treatment. The medical treatment started to be less and less effective. They weren't emptying the bladder. Mm. But this is early part of the game where it's only been happening for a few months, not for a few years, where...
Yeah.
Your bladder is taking some knocks where it's never going to be completely normal, and that is can have issues post-operatively. You can't do surgery on the bladder. The bladder, even if we reduce the size of the prostate and the bladder is no longer obstructed, over time, the bladder usually will go back to normal, as normal as possible. But some people, their bladder is in such bad shape, maybe we're hoping it functions 70% or 80%. The bladder filling sensation is poor. They can't even really feel when their bladder is full. Their contractility, the motor activity of the bladder is poor. They're not contracting the bladder sufficiently to allow you to empty your bladder. So you don't want to get to that stage. There are dozens of men in this country, because they were stubborn, because they never wanted to see a doctor, even if it's for 20 minutes to find out what the problem is, get on some medication, get a simple blood test, are on dialysis, where they have to get dialysis access, where they're waiting for a kidney transplant, where they got to wake up 3 times a week, 4 o'clock in the morning to get dialysis.
Yes.
And that just completely reduces the quality of life. Even if you get a kidney transplant, the average kidney transplant might only last 12 years. You got to be on immunosuppressive drugs. You're going to be at risk for a lot of infections. Those medications have side effects. So we have two kidneys. We don't want to have to lose one. But if you're not emptying your bladder, you're in danger of losing both of them, because there's continual back pressure on both of your kidneys because your bladder is always full. That's going to cause initially acute deterioration of your kidney function. And if you let it last for 6 weeks or more, or depending on how severe the problem is, it can lead to irreversible chronic renal failure where you have to be on dialysis waiting for a miracle of a kidney transplant.
Right.
So we don't want to even go near that and get... Medication is so effective. You can have men who are peeing 5 times a night, dribbling every time they pee, feeling like urine, smelling like urine all the time. We can put them on a simple medication. Within a week, 2 weeks, they're peeing like a young man again. Your prostate will continue to get bigger.
You do. It's a very... Let me tell you, the first time I peed fully, like really, I'd gotten rid of the bag, I'm fully right with me, I was so proud of myself. I felt young. I felt strong again. I was like, I mean, it was such a great sensation to sit there and to hear how strong my stream sounded when it was hitting the liquid in the toilet, was absolutely an amazing feeling. It was really quite surprising to me that I would take so much pleasure. So you go through this procedure. In my case, I went through the procedure where they actually shave and create space again. And then Greg gave me the great news that I got in just in time, right? So anyway, I get this done, and I'm going through the recovery process. And like I said, during the process, in my case, you know, I did have a bag that I had to use for a couple of days. And then you start peeing on yourself after a while. And, you know, you got to get used to a little bits of blood coming in there because, you know, you did have a shaving procedure done. And then the scar tissue, which is a very weird sensation coming out of your penis. It is the weirdest, craziest feeling, but it's also a very cool feeling, if it makes any sense. It's a, you know how some women like to pinch pimples because of how it feels when it pops? It's like that. This is like when it pops through, you're like, wah! You know, so it's really good. So that happens for a couple of weeks. Like,
well, that's a little bit of a misconception. For the procedure you had, there's actually no tissue coming out. All the tissue is removed. So when you have a bladder hematoma, a little blood clot, it can basically calcify as it lays in the bladder over time. And if when it comes out, it feels like a soft, malleable piece of tissue, but it's actually not tissue. There are some procedures. You can science it all you want.
Have you ever had it done?
No, I haven't.
And you better listen to me as I tell you how it feels.
All right. But just to clarify, it wasn't tissue where you were passing.
You don't care when it's passing,
I hear you.
You only know there's stuff passing. Now, you did warn me that this would happen, so I wasn't, you know, scared or thought that there was anything wrong. Mm. Obviously, you weren't. And you have any type of, you know, surgery or procedure, you've got to recover.
Putting in perspective, your size of your prostate, a lot of urologists would have said, is beyond the scope of minimally invasive resection. So I pushed the envelope.
Yes, trying
to help you out.
To avoid a bigger surgery.
Yeah. Right. We didn't want to do any open surgery or anything else. Right. So that...
Again, why you have to have early detection, people.
Yeah.
I can't think of an instance where late detection is better than early detection. Yeah. Can you? You're smarter than me. I never went to college. Can you think of any instance where to discover something on your body or something medical about you is better to do it later than early?
Absolutely.
If you want to cure it.
So a normal size prostate is 20 grams. Once it gets 40, I've worked in Germany, France.
Right.
For a Caucasian man, when they say a 40 gram prostate, oh, that's huge.
So 20 is normal.
20 is normal. 40 is
huge.
For a Caucasian country, 40 is big.
How big was mine?
60 is like, oh my God, this is humongous.
Talk to me.
Yours was like 110.
Yeah, baby. If you can do something, you do it right. Wow.
So here, I'll routinely see 70, 80, 150, 200 gram prostates all the time.
Wow.
And all the time, my counterparts in other countries will never see that.
Right. Well, you're welcome, Greg.
Let me
just say that. Yeah, you're very welcome for giving you something to talk about when you go to your conferences around the world. You're going to be in Hawaii talking to the other doctors from Germany and tell them, no, I had a guy who was 120.
So I actually had to adapt what I did because for the procedure that we do here, the most effective way of removing a huge prostate, there are three different ways. There's a HOLEP, which is a holmium laser enucleation. There's a TULIP with a tulmium laser enucleation. And then there's a bipolar transurethral section of the prostate.
Honey, translate that for me later, okay?
So a bipolar TURP has the advantage that you can leave some tissue strategically. So even if your urethral external sphincter that allows you to control your urine is weak, which is very common because your prostate is so big, it's slowing down your urine.
Right.
The sphincter that is supposed to be slowing down your urine hasn't been doing the job it's supposed to do for years. So inevitably, your sphincter is going to be weak. If we do a enucleation, that means basically taking almost the entire prostate out. And every time you cough, every time you sneeze, you're going to leak some urine. That's going to affect your quality of life.
Yeah, it's like a little diaper or something. Huh?
If you scope the patient and you look, oh, it looks perfect because there's no prostate whatsoever. The prostate's the size of a 12-year-old.
Yeah, but I'm wearing a diaper.
Yeah, exactly. So for that reason, only for select cases, I would employ that modality. So during COVID, everywhere in the world for a bipolar transurethral section of prostate, you admit someone overnight and you wash out their bladder with continuous bladder irrigation. You have a three-way catheter. It's a painless irrigation.
Right.
But because we never had any beds,
right.
I stepped the prostate's cases never stopped coming. Right. I had to be basically change my management where I would send somebody home. I had to be very diligent in making sure they got hemostasis, that right. their urine was clear. Right. So I had to go to the point where I would speak to colleagues around the world and they just don't believe it's possible to send somebody doing. Home. Right. And I do that every single day that I operate because I do so many cases.
We're making you a star, Greg.
Yeah, very much so. In fact, one of my profs actually encouraged me to write actually a case study and publish it in a journal.
Right now. I will. Spell my name right.
So sometimes hardship, you got to adapt and you need to.
And you, I think, you know, that's a relatable story because I think all of us in our job place can relate to what you said. When something didn't exactly be perfect, you use your experience and you use your skill set and you find another way to get it done.
The bag for most men is not that bad. First of all, it's waterproof. You wear a pair of pants, no one even knows you have it. You basically, after the procedure, by the time you go home, everybody's different.
I hear you, and it may not be that bad, but psychologically, it's not.
But for most men, you come to the office the first thing in the morning. We take the catheter. Yeah.
Come there before everybody shows up. That's why we come early, Greg.
Yes.
Because it's embarrassing to run around with a bag of pee.
Well, you have a pair of pants no one even knows
you
have.
You know.
Yes, I hear you.
Right. So,
it's a small price to pay.
Ah, that's where I was going to end up. Believe me, I was going to end up there. Because I will say, even though, you know, the recovery was those weeks and the bag was a pain, despite what Dr. Greg may say, it's a pain in the, you know what, to have that dangling there and change it. The wife had to help me. That's never a mental pleasure thing, right? But let me say, despite all of that, giving up my good Saturday and all to have this procedure done, I would do that again in a heartbeat. I think I could honestly say, I guess besides my aneurysm, which was really, you know, you're going to die if we don't do this now. Besides that, I have never had a medical procedure that has improved my life as much as this one. I cannot tell you how much better it is now not to be in pain when I have to urinate, to know that I will not be waking up every 20 minutes to sit on the toilet for another half hour trying to urinate. The fact that I can plan my day out normally, I don't have to make sure we can't go yet. I got to go to the bathroom before we go. And everyone got to wait a half hour before I could come, before we could leave, because they got to wait for me to try. It is a life-changing, and I dare say, a life-saving procedure for me. My life is so much better because of that procedure, Greg. I'm not happy with myself for taking so long to do it. And well, taking that chance.
Better late than never.
It is better, and but don't wait.
So putting it in perspective, you talk about a catheter overnight after a minimally invasive procedure. There are probably 500, 600 men in this country who are on a catheter because their prostatic obstruction is so severe, they can't even initiate a dribble.
Correct.
And they've already started to go in renal failure.
Correct.
And they have to... They have to live their life on a catheter.
The ants does justify the means. I get where you're going, and I agree with you 1,000,000,000%.
So a lot of patients will already be on a catheter, for years.
Right.
So to tell them that they're going to have a catheter just one more night is nothing. Is absolutely nothing. It's a joy. Yeah. It's a joy to think the end is the lights at the end of the tunnel.
Let me tell you, I can't point to a day in a calendar, but there was a feeling that all of a sudden, I was fully recovered, and I was normal. I was peeing strong, normally, every time I went to pee. And that was such a great feeling. And let's talk about the other important thing about this, Dr. Greg. Now, see, about the important stuff now.
Yes, yes.
Well, how am I going to work after it is over sexually? Anytime we go to any doctor, y'all touch any part of our body down there, the number one thing going through our head.
Well, you read my mind. You read my mind.
Literally going through both of our heads.
Yes.
Right? Is, am I going to be functional after you're done?
So, in fact, this will improve the actual quality of your erection. If you're trying to get an erection and be sexually intimate and your bladder is always full, a lot of men have embarrassment because they're actually leaking during foreplay. They're having discomfort when they're trying to be intimate.
Right.
So this will not only not affect your erection in any way, it'll actually improve your erection.
You know, the favorite thing you ever said to me was, okay, you should be able to have sex whenever you want. I was like, that's my doctor.
Very true.
That's when you won me, baby. That's when I said, you know what? I'm going with Craig. I'm going with him. Because, you know, we should be. But let's be real. There are a lot of men out there. Sex is becoming, it becomes mental. Right? Because you know you're not performing at the level you want to be performing at. And that starts to beat on you mentally. So when it comes time to have sex, you are caught up in the game. Am I going to have a proper erection? Am I going to be able to satisfy my partner? Am I going to be able to do this? And so not only do you now have a physical issue that's stopping you from having the sex you should be having, but you have a mental issue that's beating that problem into your head over and over again. And trust me, that is way too much to go through.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you don't need to.
So that brings up an important point. Medical management.
Bringing it up. That's what I'm talking about.
Yes. Medical management is always the mainstay of any enlargement of your prostate. It's not always going to work. Some people get a lifetime of emptying their bladder on this medical management. But for the most part, maybe you'll get 8 years. Maybe you'll get 10 years. Maybe you'll get 15 or 20 years. But eventually, the medication is going to be less and less effective because your prostate continues to get bigger.
Don't wait, guys.
Yeah. So there's an alpha blocker medication. Right. Men will hear the term, and they know if they are not taking it, their father took it, their brother took it, their uncle took it, their granddad took it. Flomax or Tamsulosin.
Yes. Oh, Flomax. Yeah. Let me tell you, Flomax before this procedure was, I had to have Flomax with me all the time. Got so bad, I used to double take them to try and pee, right? If I was going out, maybe having a drink, and I was going to have a couple of drinks at a party, I would take extra Flomax to try get ahead of getting that prostate open up enough so I could urinate.
And some men are embarrassed to travel because they're on a plane, they didn't drink anything probably for 12 hours being afraid because they know they got to pee all the time. And they're embarrassed that the whole plane will see them going to pee in a two-hour flight five, six times.
Got to sit on that end. Got to sit on the aisle row because I'm going to be moving all the time.
Exactly. And that's no way.
In movie theaters too? Yeah. How about that? How much of the movie are you missing?
None.
You come back. What did I miss? Right? Because you go to the bathroom so often. Now you're there the whole time.
And if you're waking up five or six times to urinate, a lot of men take an hour to get back to sleep. So they're walking around like a zombie. And as you get older, you might be in your 70s. You're not as limble and nimble as you used to be. Waking up in the night, you're already feeling bad enough because you're waking up a lot of time your spouse. So you don't want to put on the light.
Right.
So a lot of men are actually falling.
Yeah.
And they're at the age where they may have some osteoporosis.
Falling's not a good thing.
They're going to get fractures, threat. And there's a patient, I brought it up before. He's actually told me to tell his story publicly so people can learn from it. This is a man, middle age, between my age and your age. Family,
that is not
wife.
Middle age.
Okay, a little bit older.
Yeah, okay.
And he had traveled that day. That day, he went to pee. He peeing incessantly throughout the night.
Right.
He didn't want to put on the light to wake up his wife.
Right.
He literally tripped over his bag, went head first through the wall.
Oh my gosh!
Cervical spine fracture, quadriplegic.
What?
And these stories happen.
What?
Yes. Because
falling in the night, going to the bathroom?
And it happens a lot. There are men who have fractured their pelvis. There are men who have fractured their...
I mean, I've bumped my toe before, but wow.
So even for that reason, you need your 7 hours sleep just for your cardiovascular health.
Wow.
So it's not just reducing the quality of your life. It's reducing the longevity of your life. You may not feel that, but you're going to live a lot longer if you're getting those 7 hours of sleep. If you're drinking a sufficient amount of fluid and you're not dehydrated, you're going to live longer than someone who's getting maybe 3 hours cumulative sleep and not even a good amount of sleep. And it's going to affect you socially. It's going to affect you professionally.
Hydration is so important. It's one of the things I'm learning as I'm hitting 60 now this year,
and then
how important that
think about it. So many of these men are so fatigued. They're falling asleep at the drop of a hat. They got to drink caffeine all day long.
Yeah.
And what does that do? It exacerbates the problem.
And those caffeine drinks, right? Those power drinks.
So they already had a reason that be peeing every 15 minutes. Now they're peeing every 5 minutes.
Right.
There's some persons that I've known who have basically had to stop working because they just couldn't control their bladder. So I say, get control of your bladder. Never let the bladder or the prostate rob you of your happiness or your quality of life or your erections.
Yes, or your woman. Believe me, that's where you all need to concentrate the effort on. If you want to stay drinking your beer, stay pleasuring your wife and having a satisfaction, you know, a home sexual life with your significant other, you need to go see the doctor and get that thing checked on.
And there's so many men who have become so innovative in the bottles and the way they create this hole in the bottle so that they can quickly, with 30 seconds notice, be able to unzip their pants while they're driving and get it into the
now
hole in the bottle.
If people out there are doing that
all the time, particularly taxi
that's
drivers.
That's incredible, Craig. Craig, it shows really how much work we still have
or
to
police
do.
Or police officers.
How much work we have to do with the mindset of particular Bahamian men. We are so, intimidated by the process of seeing a doctor or ashamed or whatever, that we're going through that. Oh, guys, come on.
Or police officers, because of their uniform and the amount of respect they garner in the community, they don't want to be seen running from their squad car to the back of a tree to pee. Because it's going to be frowned upon. So they literally have to have a container pee into. And you don't have to
live
like that.
Fellas, don't do that. No.
Flomax, as you mentioned, is effective.
Yes.
Not every man can take Flomax. Some people, unfortunately, have side effects. You always take Flomax at night because it can somewhat make you drowsy. The type of medication, it's in a class of drugs called an alpha blocker, where it actually can cause you to feel a little bit lightheaded. It can lower your blood pressure. If you're already prone to have low blood pressure, it's the wrong one. It can cause some nasal congestion in some men. For some men, it can cause initially some retrograde ejaculation. So men will say, why all of a sudden is the ejaculate volume so small? Mm. A lot of times it's harmlessly going back in the bladder and then you just pee it out afterwards.
Right.
Over time, usually it corrects itself. And if you stop the Flomax, it'll start going back to normal.
How long should I be using Flomax? I
mean, as
is
long
it a
as
lifelong
it works.
Drug? Can it be a lifelong
so
drug?
So once you start, the problem, and I always like to preach that in every form, and particularly in this one, we treat the root cause. The root cause is enlarged prostate.
Mm.
The prostate is not being reduced in size by the Flomax.
No.
The Flomax basically relaxes the bladder and it helps facilitate the emptying of the bladder.
Right.
But what happens is that the Flomax is treating something and the problem is just getting worse. Because as you get older...
I used Flomax for years and it didn't fix me.
As you get older, your prostate gets bigger and bigger.
Worse,
and then...
So basically it just puts stuff off.
It does.
I mean, we're talking about is... So forcing you or giving you the luxury maybe of a little time if you think you want to have the time. But the longer you wait, the more chances you're taking.
Exactly. And then I'll say something.
So it's a dangerous insurance
policy. If you're on Flomax, now this is some wonderful news men can take to heart. You can take a daily Cialis, 5 milligrams, along with the Flomax, and it's more effective in many long-term randomized control studies with tens of thousands of patients done in different countries and top institutions in the world. It's more effective to take Flomax plus the daily Cialis, and Cialis is known to give you a good erection.
That's my combination I was on.
Yeah.
I'm the poster child of what you're talking about.
So,
I was on that combination.
You can tell the wife and the girlfriend you're on the Cialis daily.
Right.
Because
I'm taking the Flomax.
Not because I'm less of a man,
but it's because of the Flomax causes, some troubles. Because
it's helping you empty your bladder, get you a better flow.
Right.
But the side effect, unfortunately, is you're going to get a great erection.
Right.
For the most part.
Darn.
So, sorry to say that.
But again, Greg, I think we should emphasize it's not a combination you want to be using for years. It's what I was on. It didn't fix me. Right? I didn't get fixed until I actually got something done. I mean, it eased some of my life. And I don't know if this is typical or happens to others, but it worked great at first.
Yes.
Right? And then after a while, it didn't seem to be quite as an effective a combination anymore.
Because your prostate is continuing to get bigger. There are medications that actually can shrink your prostate. That's called a 5-alpha reductase inhibitor. Avodart or dutasteride is something that a lot of men will hear that name. Finasteride is another version of it.
I think I've been on Avodart before, too.
But the problem about it is most men, and studies have shown that, will not stick with Avodart.
Right.
Because it kills your sexual drive.
No, there you go.
So any man who's middle-aged will rather pee incessantly than have no sexual drive.
Absolutely.
And have difficulty maintaining an erection.
Yes.
Exactly that.
Yes. Yes.
But what men who are an avatar need to be mindful of, and I always want people to know this, if you've been on Avanart or finasteride for more than 6 months, it artificially halves your PSA. So a PSA of 3 is actually 6. A PSA of 4 is actually 8.
So we're going to get a false sense of everything's okay.
Exactly that. And a lot of men do that. They know that when they take the Avanart, their PSA goes down.
They just want to cheat the test.
Yeah. And they don't realize that they're probably missing the opportunity to pick up early prostate cancer.
They just want the wife to stop nagging.
Exactly. We have a call coming in. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks.
Yeah, good evening, Dr. Pinto.
How are you doing?
Actually, I just tuned in, and so I just learned that information that you gave me, right?
Yes.
But you know, I was always paying attention, and you always tell me to. At one time, I didn't even want to stop taking the Avanart because it didn't prove so great, right?
Yes.
And you explained to me how it would kill the sex drive, but it didn't kill my sex drive because, you know, I have two children post-52, right?
Well, you're a lucky one. You're a lucky one.
Yeah, maybe not financially.
Yeah, maybe it dimmed it, but you were such a glory hound that you were fine.
Yeah, but you remember the reason why you gave me the super pubic? Because, you know, I still wanted to have some fun.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and so I like how your guest, he's having humor, so I decided to join it because I get kind of jealous. He's having fun with it. And so this is what happens post, you know. And I like to share some experience. I hope Brother Line come on because this is, you know, like with me, with my diet, you know, I don't eat meat and... For decades, and so I'm basically a pescatarian, like, you know, whatever, but and I still end up with BPH. So I look at this antigonadic atrophic attack that most people are denying that you admitted to with the decreased sperm autosomal count. And gonads in general, whether it be female or female, right? But I mean, what I'm saying is, Doctor, I appreciate this information so much. And so with me, what I do is, remember, you guys didn't really get on top of me to even start taking the Flomax and Avodart.
Yes,
I was lying to you guys for a while, you know. And then, like,
well,
you know, like,
let me just say, like, yeah, we were talking about sizes.
I'm ready to eat these things because I couldn't, you know, the turf was so messy. So I just shared this with your guest because I like how he's being so forthright with the disclosure. So we have to humanize these stories because it's really scary with other situations. Now I just mindful of what you said just now with the Avodart, with cheating the PSA, right? Because my PSA is within range now. So now that I'm off the Avodart, I have to come in. I really about to go do my physical. I'm supposed to go Friday trying to get, you know, to go do these normal things. Like, I do it every year, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and so I was taken aback by that. And I glad you said that because I'd be mindful of that because what I did and what I do anyhow is like, even though you say, like, I was taking it Avodart after they achieved the effect, I still would go like a month or so without taking it or 2 months and then I'll start taking it again intermittently. Is that a good idea? Because I don't.
Well, another thing that a lot of people need to realize is that even when you're on Avodart, it takes 9 months to a year to potentially reduce the size of your prostate by 40-50%. But it doesn't do anything for at least 9 months. So you got to, for a lot of men, you're killing their sexual drive for 9 months and they're not seeing any improvement in their urinary symptoms. You just got to hold strong. And let's say your prostate is 150 grams. You reduce that prostate by 50%. It's still huge.
Yeah, but I want to put this in as a living experience. I don't think it did nothing to my drive, but what I found out is I was angry about the retrograde ejaculation, right?
It all depends. So, for example, what I do for most patients is I do an ejaculatory-sparing bipolar transurethral resection. And what
that sounds fun!
Yeah. When you have a 150-gram prostate, it's very difficult to do that.
Yeah,
and you did have a resection, and you did have two kids.
No, I was kind of different, but
yeah.
Like I say, I got this joke for your guests. You remember when I was wearing the catheter, right?
Yes.
I couldn't believe how long I was wearing it, you know. And I made a joke, and I think it's you or Dr. Stevens or Dr. Roberts that I was actually jogging the bridge with this catheter on. My brother couldn't believe it. Anybody was laughing, but I tell you, I was jogging the bridge in the steps.
You was jogging the bridge.
I got so comfortable with wearing it. This is a joke for your guests.
Some people live their whole life with a catheter.
I was afraid of it. I take it off because it was so easy to urinate. You know, at one time the bag burst through it. Man, there's so much nightmares. Anyhow, but it's good to have common sense because a bad experience I had on the ward where, you know, the blood clots post the surgery and the nurse tell me take two pills to go sleep. But I'm me being with a thinker. Well, I say this bag was at 200 milliliters for hours, man. So my bladder almost burst. So I was hoping, and I was kind of disappointed in the level of knowledge that the nurses displayed towards this condition that man up. Because they was ignoring me all through the night. I actually wanted to walk up the ward to go in the E&E to get attention, man.
Yeah, really
and truly was scared.
Well, I'm not going to let you hit
walk out with that big bag, though.
I always say you have to walk in someone's shoes. I'm not going to let you hit out the nurses. The nurses are angels in disguise, and they don't get enough. They're overwhelmed. They're overwhelmed.
Listen to me, really, truly, I love them, you know. But this particular nurse, I don't think she liked men in general. That's what happened because, I mean, it was like if I was ignorant and I had to take the two pills and go sleep, who knows? But when they finally look in the drawer, they find out that most of the pills, the painkillers they was giving me, I was just taking them and throwing them in the drawer because I don't believe in cross medication because I think about my liver so much.
All right.
Thanks. I like them to listen.
Hey, can you hold on before you go, can you tell me?
I got to get this rebroadcast because I think I missed it on something, but I like that and give thanks.
Hey, caller, before yes, you sir. Go, can I ask you something?
Yes, sir.
About that jogging thing. Yeah. Where'd you tie it?
I had to tie normal. It was
strapped to your leg.
So you give it like extra rope for the running?
You know, rope. It was just a normal strap to the tie, and they ran the short pants. And I used to make a joke, and I could show my female friends, like, this is where my penis actually is. I used to point to the little blue normal. But they couldn't actually believe it. But after Dr. Pender decided to give me, I came in there with one condition. It was Bob Moore. I had the post.
I'm picturing you running with this thing. And it's...
What you call it? You call it uremia?
Yes.
What you call it with the blood in the urine, Dr. Pendo?
Hematuria.
The dogs chase you?
Macroscopic hematuria, yeah.
So, you know, it's all a human experience, but I mean, it happened to me, and I'm a vegetarian, and I have a good diet, so I don't know what really is the cause of this. We have to be on the attack. Give thanks.
Yeah, so what we're here trying to give knowledge. We're trying to prevent persons from suffering needlessly.
And that's not an unusual story for you.
No, dog. I literally...
That people go, wow.
If I can estimate over 500, 600 men in this country are on a catheter and they just got to change it every month. And you can imagine the indignity of
on a day-to-day, every day.
A catheter always eventually is going to leak.
Just let things go.
It's always eventually going to get infected. There's always going to be blood in the urine.
Wow.
Obviously, they can't use their male member.
Wow.
So it just reduces the quality of life. So don't get to that stage.
You can avoid that.
Don't get to that stage. So... Yeah. We said a lot. I think we changed lives. I always would love to welcome you back. You're a breath of fresh air, Eddie. Thank you very much for giving your personal experience.
Hey, thanks for your professional experience. It really did. I kid y'all not. It changed my life.
Yeah. So never let the bladder control your life. Never let your prostate control your life. Always control your bladder and your prostate, and never let where the next bathroom is dictate how you move throughout life. This is Urologist Speaks. We're going to welcome back Eddie Carter, hopefully very soon again. But thank you very much, and have a good evening, Eddie, to his lovely wife and Bahamas.
Thanks, Greg. With the help of God, man, we live longer.